Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze. We put it in, it took like 30 seconds, guys. And its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine is at about 50%, and I'll tell you why. I have a tendency to overcommit. I want to help with everything I can possibly help with. I want to do everything I can possibly do. I want to be with people, and I forget that at the end of the day, I am an introvert, and I really need time to recharge and take care of myself. Therapy gives me important tools to do that, to recognize what's going on, to understand my battery and where it is and why it's there and what I can do to recharge. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/pantsuit. So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first mani system.
I don't not see why not the president wouldn't support his own intelligence agencies. No? Does that make sense to you?
No. Oh, sorry. I was saying no to whether or not I wouldn't not want to not talk about this anymore.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance.
Welcome to another episode of Pantsuit Politics. Or not welcome to another. No, we all are welcome. We're just going to start throwing not like every other word because we live in the upside down world now. And so we just use not a lot. And then we say, no, we didn't mean to say not. We're taking the not back. But there's another not and a no to a question we didn't ask. I'm exhausted by it. I'm exhausted.
Because apparently what you should do is ignore the entire context of everything.
And the English language.
Just focus on particular words that were or were not made into contractions that would change your meaning. I don't know. It's been a crazy week.
I understand that this is serious business, but what else are we supposed to do but laugh? It's like we're being punked.
I don't know how anybody who has a job related to foreign policy now is getting out of bed in the morning. The poor men and women of the Foreign Service who are watching this White House seriously suggest that a former ambassador might be made available to Vladimir Putin for questioning? What is going on, and what are people to do? This is really serious.
It's so serious. It's like he does what he always does, which he sucks all the air out of the room, so there's no oxygen for the serious things because we're too busy paying attention to how ridiculous he is. It's a classic. It's a classic move at this point.
Well, he's gone to his classic Twitter saturation theory now because he knows he's in trouble, so it becomes almost like drunk tweeting, right? I know the president isn't a drinker, but that's how it feels. It's the all caps and the strangely capitalized words and the fake news media, and they're the enemies of the people. It's just like the greatest hits all coming out anytime something goes disastrously wrong. But this disastrous wrongness is, I think, a new level of disastrous wrongness. As terrible, the only comparable moment I can think of was Charlottesville. And as terrible as that was, I don't think it endangered our country on the level that this endangers our country.
I'm truly offended by white supremacists, and I find their growing power disturbing. But they don't scare me like Vladimir Putin.
Well, I was going to say, perhaps that's because I think we are capable as Americans of really understanding the threat of white supremacy and really talking to one another about that on a personal level. There's so much about what Russia is up to that we cannot understand and we cannot converse about and we cannot safeguard ourselves against. And that's why, to me, this calls for action. I think lots of things previously have called for action, but this calls for action at a new level. And I just keep thinking about, if you are still defensive of the president and still saying that, you know, people like us are just hysteric liberals, right? I'm not a liberal, but you can call me that if that makes you feel better. That's fine. But if that's your perspective, what is it that you are willing to sacrifice next? Because it's always going to be more, right? If right now you're saying, well, this was a blunder, but it's not as big a deal as people are making it, and your real concern is getting Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay, but what are you going to give up next? You've had to give up something every step along the way, and I don't know when people will start to see clearly that that's not going to stop, and what you're being asked to give up is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
So here's the thing, too, that really, really, really bothers me. Did you see the reporting in Politico where congressional Republicans were basically quoted off the record as saying, well, like, what else do you want us to do? What else could we do? We've had the investigations. The White House doesn't care. We passed the increased sanctions. He's still going to do it. And what I wish Politico had said back, or somebody would say back, is the issue is not that you don't have any options. That is not the issue, and we all know it. You know it. The issue is that the options available to you don't involve anything that you perceive as giving a win to the other party, and that's why you won't do it. Be honest with yourself. The reason you won't take a step in any direction against this president is because it could be perceived as an electoral win or electoral strategy for the Democrats, and it would give them a point in their playbook, and you can't stand that, Mitch McConnell. And like, so don't be disingenuous and be like, I don't know what else we can do. You mean I don't know what else we could do that might be beneficial to Democrats? Because that's, you know, we're at a space, and I'm not saying necessarily that if that's not some of what was coming into play with the defense of Bill Clinton. We have to defend our president at all costs because it would give the other party a win. Amy Klobuchar was on NPR this morning talking about a bill she has forward to help states protect their own electoral databases from hackers. And I was so angry with the NPR reporter because she basically asked her, like, isn't this working at cross purposes? Because this is going to be an electoral strategy for you to talk about the Republicans not doing this. And if you give them a win on this, isn't that bad for you? And she was like, no, because I'm not here to do that. I'm here to protect the elections. That's the mission. That's the strategy. You know, I was bothered that she asked that. I thought Amy Klobuchar responded well, but like, I just feel like that's the undercurrent here. But because we can't just put pause long enough on this partisan environment to say what's best for the country instead of what might hurt our party, we can't go anywhere.
Something that comes up a lot in our conversations is the don't hate the player, hate the game mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I think the truth of it is the game has never been great and it is devolving.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, the players are going to have to change the game.
Yeah.
It is going to take individual people being willing to sacrifice their electoral potential to do what's right for the country. And it takes all of us to be standing there with those people. I would be going the distance for any Republican who was actually behaving like someone who had a shred of power in the United States Congress.
Yeah.
I would go the distance for those people. I would be knocking on my neighbor's doors and like, this is me. That is not a thing that I want to do. This is that's not how I live my life. I don't love to converse with strangers, but I would be doing it for anyone who was standing up and trying to make a difference here. They don't give me that option, though, right? Because they're too busy just calculating what, quote, the base is going to do. And every time a new poll comes out, I saw one this morning, something like 85% of Republicans approve of Trump's handling of the Helsinki conference.
Oh, my baby Jesus.
You know, think about who you're asking at this point. 85% of a shrinking population doesn't mean a whole lot. And I don't know what the accuracy of that is, but every time we talk about those stories, we're making it worse, right?
Yeah.
We're not giving people any room to make better decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's so true that, you know, as long as we keep talking about it like that and people hear it and be like, well, everybody else thinks it okay, so it must be. It must be. There must be truth in both sides, you know. Oh, man. And sometimes there isn't. It's the false equivalency. And I hear people, I don't just hear the press do that. I hear people say that. Oh, well, just both sides are rigged and both sides, you know, the cynicism. Both sides are wrong. Both sides are, yeah, because we feel like we have to pick a side. Maybe just focus on the reality in front of us without worrying about how your team's talking about it.
That's right. There's just nothing partisan about our relationship as a country with Russia. And the people who are trying to, Dana Rohrabacher, shame on you. Like the people who are trying to make this a partisan issue, it's horrific.
The most disturbing portion of that, like the most horrific part to me, is I was having a conversation with an incredibly right-winged friend of mine. And he started talking about, oh, well, Trump tricked Putin into talking about $400 million in illegal contributions to Hillary Clinton. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. And he was talking about Putin talking about Brower. Like it became this partisan talking about. I'm like, I don't think you understand the reality of that situation. Who this man is, why he did what he did, why Vladimir Putin hates him so much. And now this has just been transformed into a partisan talking point. Now, Brower, this man who I think did something very brave and very good and worked on behalf of this, his lawyer, who was Russian lawyer, who was slaughtered by the Putin regime, is now being turned into an enemy of America and the, you know, a liberal donor. I just, it's so disturbing to me.
And for what?
Yeah.
Like, what is that in service of?
It's in service of Vladimir Putin. That's who's in service of. That's the bananas part. Like, it's just exactly what he wants. They're turning the entire, all the ideologues on the right into soldiers in this war against this man who did the right thing. It's disturbing.
It is disturbing. And I just, again, I go back to, what is at the root of this need to tell that story about everything?
Mm-hmm.
What is causing us to need to turn and by us, I mean the people on the right. What is causing us to need to turn everything, even a former ambassador and an American citizen who I agree has acted heroically to help expose the depravity of Vladimir Putin? Why would we need to make that something that's about Democrats? That just doesn't make any sense to me. In service of what? Is it really that important to you to get a conservative justice who might someday, maybe under the right circumstances, overturn Roe versus Wade? Are you willing to sacrifice our entire democracy over abortion rights? Is that where we are? Or our gun rights? Or, I don't know, gay marriage? Like, whatever it is, what is the point here? I'm really struggling.
I think the point at which you trust Vladimir Putin over Americans, even if they're liberal, we got a problem. And I think part of it is it, and I see this on the other side too, I do, which is you, if I'm going to talk about you, this is the othering. If I'm going to talk about you like you're trash, like you're an enemy of the state, like, and be justified in treating you horribly and talking about you horribly, the stakes have to be really high for me to justify that to myself. And to justify acting so ugly and feeling like my fellow Americans are enemies, I have to make sure that they are really, really bad. They have to be the worst in order for me to be okay as hopefully someone who views themselves as an ethical and moral being to justify those actions. And so everything has to be justified. Like if there's, it's this like, I can't let a chink in the armor. If I give you a win, if I admit that you might be right about something, then it undercuts this whole wall I've built on why you're the enemy and everything I throw at you is morally acceptable.
So an entire swath of the country is adopting the president's moral compass.
Yep.
We can't have this investigation because it could undermine my election. And it's all about me and therefore nothing else matters. And on the individual level, it becomes, I can't criticize the president's performance in Helsinki because it might mean that I shouldn't have voted for Donald Trump and I can't have that be correct. So none of the rest of it.
Yep.
That's a problem.
You think?
Yeah.
It's
a problem.
It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem. And I, you know, I don't know what to do except to just on individual levels continue to exhibit another way, to continue to call on our elected officials to exhibit another way. And that means sometimes saying to Democrats, I don't care if this gives the Republican a win. I don't care if this gives the pro-life movement something small that they want. Because if you don't compromise ever, that's not democracy. Democracy doesn't mean ideological purity, and it never has. Man, did you get a chance to watch Barack Obama's speech at Mandela's birthday?
I've watched portions of it, not the whole thing yet.
It's so good, and he talks about this. You know, I don't know how that man is capable of making me feel both simultaneously. I get how bad it is, and it's going to be okay. Like, oh, I tear up just thinking about it. But he talks about that. He talks about, like, this is not sustainable. It just isn't. We cannot have a democracy in which we completely and totally silence the other side because we feel like they're enemies of America, enemies of a free press, enemies of, abortion rights, enemies of the Second Amendment, enemies of small government, whatever it is. There's 300 million people. We're not all going to get what we want all the time. I know the stakes are incredibly high. I get it. But until we can find another way that doesn't involve compromise, and I haven't seen that available, then I don't know what else to do. Well, speaking of making these choices in our individual lives, lots of you wrote in about our conversation about what to say in the moment with Beth sharing in a very vulnerable space about how she wished she'd said something at a baseball game where someone was saying something sort of hate-filled. And we had a lot of people write in, but two people wrote in basically the same email, which I thought, this is a sign of something. Everybody's on the same wavelength. Kate wrote in and said, we have to say something. It doesn't have to be perfect. Next time I am a witness to hate-filled language, I'm just going to start by saying, that's not okay. I believe that once I'm able to open my mouth and let the first words come out, more will come, and I bet the others around me will rally as well and come together to either just joining me and saying, that's not okay, or coming up with the perfect comeback. It just takes one person to start a wave at a baseball game. It might be slow to start, but it can gather momentum quickly. So maybe we all just need to have that phrase, that's not okay, in our back pocket when we want to start a wave of goodness. And then Sloan wrote in and said the same thing. She said, maybe we all have the courage to be the first person. So maybe it's not even what we say in these situations, but that we just say something. And I thought that was so good and so well said.
Karen also wrote in to say that if you are not a person who frequently uses live stream apps on your phone, to practice that so that if you're in one of these situations,
you're able to
capture what's happening and share it with other people. And again, I really struggle with how and when to share this information. But Sarah, I did find it compelling when you said that there are lots of people who want to deny that these attitudes are so prevalent in our country, and it's important to show them that they are. We also got a frustrated message with us on Twitter, which I understood, about how we did not talk in this conversation about the fact that there's a pretty direct connection between an escalation in these incidents and the president and sort of this administration emboldening people. And I think on the one hand, we just kind of take that for granted.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't talk about it because I just thought all assumed we're on the same page with that. I mean, I guess we're not. But I mean, I have people down to my friends who work in customer service, like in government and other places, talking about how it has gotten so much worse since he's been elected. These are people who are not overtly political, who try to stay above the fray, who were like, no, we noticed it almost immediately. So I guess I'm just assuming we're on the same page with that.
Well, and on the other hand, I think that's absolutely true, and I do take it for granted. And I still hold people individually accountable for their actions, just like I hold myself individually accountable for not having spoken out when I should have. I hold the people who are being emboldened responsible, and I do not excuse them because the climate has worsened.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is where you and I always part ways a little bit in ways that are complementary and both important, you know. But I was thinking about our discussion on the Nuanced Life about 9/11 and your emphasis on the absence of sort of national leadership around how we should process 9/11 was a really different direction from my emphasis on how in our individual lives and circumstances, we don't do grief well. And that's just kind of our theme, right? And it's our approach to our basic philosophies about government that I tend to think about our individual contribution, and you tend to think about the environment and the culture in which we are. And I think that this is an example of how you can never take those two things apart. Because, yes, people are absolutely emboldened by this president and his policies and his language, and they are still responsible for that.
I just want to say this really fast. The reason I think it's so what Karen suggested about live streaming, for one, I think holding up a phone is a sort of protection because my husband was really big, like when we lived in Washington, D.C., and I always want to try to say something to a stranger. He'd be like, crazy lady, we don't confront strangers whose mental health or mental situation we don't understand. Like, we're not going to do that. That's how you get shot. So, because he grew up in Atlanta, so I just didn't grow up with that sort of mindset. So, but I do think, like, it is, you know, it is a risk. I don't want to be unclear that it is a risk to say something in a situation like that. And so I think being able to live stream, like getting to the live stream as a sort of protection, as a just be understand like the people around here are watching and the whole world is watching is good. And it's like a drill. Like you gotta be able to do it quickly. I think that's such a good idea. I'm gonna start practicing.
It is a risk. I also want to share the perspective that one of our listeners in the LGBTQ community generously shared with us. She was very gracious about my freezing in the moment. And she said, you know, when I hear someone make a comment like the one you described at that baseball game, and for people who didn't hear that episode, a person made an ugly comment about Pride events in Cincinnati. She said, when I have been in those moments and heard that, it is terrifying. Like every cell in my body starts to think what could happen next and who will help us. And that is an experience that I can't fully appreciate, but I'm making every effort to fully appreciate it to the extent that's possible for me. And that will be sort of what gives me courage the next time I have an opportunity to stand up and say something, because it is so wrong and heartbreaking to me that anyone in our country has that sense of fear that they're going to be attacked just because of who they are. And so I really appreciated all the messages about this. I think everyone came from a place of how can we all sincerely support each other in standing up against hateful speech. And that's something that we're going to have to do more and more, I fear, as the climate in our country seems to be devolving at a more rapid pace.
Next up, we are going to share our interview with Carrie Hicks, who is running for state senate in the state of Oklahoma. Ran her primary, y'all, while pregnant, had a baby out there while running for state senate. Is that not amazing? Won her primary, and so we're going to share our conversation with her next.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready, our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved. It's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit.
We are so excited to be talking with Carrie Hicks, who is a candidate for Senate in Oklahoma, public school teacher, has a background in politics and fundraising as well, had a baby during her campaign. Carrie, tell everyone all about yourself.
Well, hi. First of all, just thank you so much for having me on. I am a huge fan, obviously, of this podcast and just what it has meant to me as a female candidate, giving me lots of hope and inspiration to continue the momentum for our campaign. So, yes, I am a public school teacher. I've been teaching for 7 years in the classroom. And during that time, the state of Oklahoma has decreased our funding to public education by 28%. Yes, we are struggling right now just to keep the doors open to our crumbling buildings. And so in light of those statistics and just having a political science degree and background, I decided now's the time for that politically educated teacher voice to make its way to the table and really start making decisions and policies that will start to reverse that trend.
Can you give us a little bit more background on what's going on in Oklahoma? Because you have had major mobilization of teachers to speak out against a lack of funding.
Yes, we actually just, let's see, in this last year, I mean, we announced the campaign in April of 2017. And during this year of campaigning, we ended up as a state of Oklahoma in a 2-week teacher walkout in response to, yes, the lack of dedicated funding and revenue back to public schools. And there were 4 major plans that were brought to a vote in special sessions and in regular legislative session that had continued to be defeated by our electorate. And so our mobilization, if you will, was in response to the fact that our current elected officials and leadership were still just unresponsive to what are some major needs still in public education. And so many made the decision to run for public office during that time. Candidate filing happened during our statewide walkout. And so there were many, yes, that were inspired to go ahead and throw their name in the ring. Obviously, we had been announced and running for well over a year, but I mean, I was just encouraged by teachers finally finding their voice and using it in to me, you know, the most respected way and trying to address our real concerns. Those decisions are made at the state level, and that's where we need to be.
So how did you decide to run?
Well, my frustration actually started at the defeat of a state question, which was proposing a penny cent sales tax that was put to a vote of the state, and it was defeated. And that penny cent sales tax would have been dedicated revenue back to public schools. You know, and even within our own family, my husband and I disagreed about the measure because he just continued. I know, right? You got to have that respectable debate. But he, you know, viewed it as it was, as a very regressive measure and not nearly doing enough to reverse, like I said, that decade long kind of chipping away at our funding. But as a morale boost, that was the final straw. And many of my friends were kind of that same way. And just, it was just very demoralizing, you know, with the state defeating that particular measure, saying, you know, that the state legislature needs to do its job. They need to take care of funding public education. I completely agree with that. But it was just very clear that, like I said before, those officials weren't going to address it. And so we were hoping, you know, that the people would. And when that was defeated, it was kind of like, okay, I've either got to get out of the state, I have to get out of education, or I need a bolder voice to fix this problem.
Can you talk about the on the ground felt impact of this kind of budget cut for public schools?
Sure. My teaching experience has been on both sides of the fence, I guess you could say. I started in a Title I school in Northwest Oklahoma City. It is the most densely populated city block in the state of Oklahoma. So our students are severely impoverished. And then I guess the last 4 years I've spent teaching in a very, very affluent community. So, I mean, truly just like daylight and dark. And so the experience in that Title I school, I mean, we heavily relied on federal funding in order to have things like technology and 100% free and reduced lunch and breakfast program for our students. And our students took part in the backpack program, which is by our local food bank that does meals for the weekend for students who would not have access to food over the weekend when they're not in school. In Deer Creek, I mean, it's completely reverse of that. But kids are kids no matter where they are. And so at Two Lakes, those impacts have resulted in a very high turnover in staff because it's a very difficult environment to teach. And in Deer Creek, I mean, we're also now experiencing the same thing. It's a little bit later to come to light, but they have a smaller salary. So where I'm currently teaching, they offer the lowest salary in the metro and have for the last 4 years. So you are trading basically, you know, I guess it was about $1,500 to have a more manageable class environment. So everyone's impacted. You know, no school district in Oklahoma is doing well right now.
Wow.
Well, talk a little bit about your primary campaign, if you would, Carrie. You had a very difficult primary campaign from what I read.
Yes. So I am admittedly the outsider in this race, even with my political science background. I have two master's degrees to teach. You know, it was very clear from the get-go that my primary opponent kind of had, you know, the quote-unquote establishment behind her. Her resume is immaculate. I'll say that, you know, she has worked her tail off. And so, you know, with that, she's obviously had a lot more support, I guess, if you will, from, you know, kind of the good old boy club.
She's done a lot for the party, right? That's what you're trying to say, right? She's done a whole lot for the Democratic Party in Oklahoma.
Yes. And I mean, she's a former lobbyist and with the Women's Coalition. And so she and I both had that in common, and obviously wanting to bring to light some of what we feel like are the injustices that are happening to women and girls here in our state. And so we had a lot of shared views. But what she had over me was just that working relationship with a lot of really great organizations here in Oklahoma that have addressed some real critical needs for our state. And so it was tough, you know, because people are looking for a candidate that is quote unquote viable. And when you have a certain amount of money in your political campaign, people either dismiss you or they throw their support behind you. And so I was on the lower end of that. And so I think there was just a real, maybe I was actually unaware that this was happening. But, you know, I think people just felt like I couldn't win because I didn't have the money behind me. So I knocked doors, 100 doors a day. That was what I averaged.
Dang, that's a lot.
Yes. In 100 degree heat, to make
because,
sure that my,
you know, average like a third. Let me just throw in some logistics here for y'all who haven't spent a majority of your life knocking doors. I mean, 30 an hour is like, you're killing it. Probably closer to 15 to 20 an hour. So do the math on 100 a day. That's
yeah.
A lot. How rural is your district? Like how tight is the population?
It's the northwest corner of Oklahoma City. So
that's at least good. You weren't going out into like cornfields or anything. Is that real? The people who have to knock doors like that, oh my God, it's like 15 for 6 hours. That's terrible.
Exactly. There's one kind of the north end of my Senate district has really, really big lots. And so we just called it the slog. I mean, you knew that you were going to be averaging a really.
And for so long after, I would go to neighborhoods, like not knocking doors. Like I would go visit friend in DC and I'd be like, oh, this would be such a good neighborhood to knock doors. Like that's all I could ask. Everything was the prism from like, how quickly could I knock on the doors in this neighborhood?
Yes. And I mean, like I guess like our campaign strategy was, you know, quality over quantity, because we knew that with every door that I knocked that was opened, I mean, that was an opportunity to earn a vote. And so, I mean, it was more about connecting with them as human beings and hearing what they were experiencing and seeing what they were experiencing and how I as a candidate could help champion that cause for them. Because, I mean, Y'all, education is not a talking point for me. That is my life experience. That is my career. Yeah. My son has a chronic illness. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 17 months old. And so when people want to talk about education and healthcare, I mean, that is truly my life experience. I am that teacher that is struggling to pay for insulin at the end of the month.
And so how are you finding the general election now? And what are you focused on going into November?
Well, this primary election was very strange for Oklahoma in a lot of ways because we had State Question 788, which was a vote for medicinal marijuana. And so we had a lot of voters in the state that came out just to vote on that state question. This was the first time that independent voters could also request a Democratic primary ballot because we had opened our primary up to independent voters. So with those two things coupled together, having the state question and then having an influx of independent voters that could also vote, our numbers are crazy right now. We're trying to dig through, you know, who was it that voted? What was their motivation? And so everything that we had kind of anticipated as our win number, I mean, has been totally turned upside down. And now we're kind of trying to figure out, okay, who will actually show up to vote in the general? So we're kind of digesting some of those numbers, but we're just keeping our strategy strong. It's definitely July in Oklahoma and it is hot out there. And I'm a nursing mom, so I have to make sure that I am chugging that water to be able to keep my supply up. But I mean, that's what it's going to take is to continue to knock doors and have those face-to-face conversations, because I just have to believe there is more that we agree on than we disagree. I think kids, education, healthcare, access to those kinds of things, that's a nonpartisan issue for me. We have got to take care of people. And in Oklahoma, the quality of life indicator just came out and we are one of the top five worst places to live. So it just stands to reason that we get people with common sense elected who actually want to take care of people, and we can start to chip away at some of those negative statistics.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never frozen meals that are chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed. It's so flavorful. The sauces are delicious. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code pantsuit50 at factormeals.com/pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think that's awesome, Carrie. Anything else that you want to talk about that you want people to know about you or your campaign?
Sure. Really, the third point that I haven't touched on is criminal justice reform. And we have such a need in Oklahoma. We now not only top the nation at our female incarceration rates, but actually the world, which is just absolutely heartbreaking when you think about those females being mothers to families who have been now removed from that staple and that role model. And maybe they did something, you know, that they need to face a consequence for. Absolutely. But I just know that there have to be better ways for a corrections system to actually be correcting behavior.
Is that drug related, Carrie? Why is that?
Yes, we've actually incarcerated more people for marijuana charges than, I mean, some of what I would consider the worst offenses combined. And so if we could start to look at, you know, a drug court or mental health courts, I mean, we could reduce that number astronomically. And they're collecting signatures right now for a petition to try and put recreational marijuana on a state question. And if they're successful with that, I mean, that would reduce our prison population by quite a lot.
That seems so important to me. And another place where having someone who's actually been in the classroom makes a huge difference, because you're able to articulate the long-term consequences of a broken criminal justice system. Just as we sat down to record this morning, I got a message from a teacher in my neighborhood who is at a professional development session that is focused on trauma based on the presence of ICE in our communities. And what children have witnessed related to ICE. And I thought, you know, everybody who complains about funding public school can't imagine what we're asking teachers to be here in 2018.
Mm-hmm. I actually had that same conversation with a potential voter who is a school teacher. He teaches in the south side of Oklahoma City, which has a very large population of immigrants. And so he wanted to know my stance on ICE as it relates to schools. And, you know, I just said, on a national scale, I disagree with what's going on. And as a teacher, we know that to be effective at educating kids, we have to have trust. There has to be respect. And it goes both ways. That mutual respect and that trust in being able to educate a child is so, so, so important. So if they are now fearful that the school or their teacher is going to be reporting, I mean, we literally can no longer do our jobs of educating kids, which, I mean, that people don't understand how important those two things are in being able to have that relationship with a child. They will not learn anything from you if they don't trust you, and they will not learn anything from you if they don't respect you. And I think when you are asking teachers to do things that go against that, you're going to lose a lot of teachers that just simply are unwilling to do what they know is not in the best interest of their students.
What has been the most surprising thing to you as a female candidate? What would you tell women running right now or thinking about running?
Well, the shame game is real. Let's just talk about that for a minute. So obviously being pregnant for 9 months of the primary race, I mean, people would either allude to it or they would ask questions about it that obviously would never be asked of a male counterpart. And that's okay. I'm fine with that. I can't control people's reactions, but I can explain to them how I'm still...
Your brain still works?
Yeah, my brain still works. I absolutely have the fortitude to be able to continue to knock doors, take care of my kids, plan lesson plans, prepare for state testing, you name it, I got it. This is not going to undermine my work ethic. And so I think that was a lot of false assumptions about me as a candidate, was that since I was pregnant, I would just quietly, you know, acquiesce into the shadows. But girls, I'm here to tell you, lean all the way in. I mean, there's just no better time to be a mom, which to me, you know, is taking care of people. And the fact that we're not doing that in our in our local government and what I would consider on a national scale as well, we've got to step forward and offer that voice so confidently. And so one really funny story. So I've got really thick skin, y'all. My husband does stand up comedy. So let me tell you, when people have a sense of humor, I think it makes the world a better place. But I was on the Doors, 8 months pregnant, and I was knocking for the listed Democrat in the household, and it was the husband that answered. And so we were having a very interesting conversation about a lot of federal issues that this voter was, you know, concerned about. And, you know, I was listening and taking it all in. And finally, he holds up my walk card and he said, "Well, you look, much thinner here." And I laughed loudly. Like, I thought that was hilarious. You know, he's making a joke about me being pregnant. Obviously I'm 3 weeks due with my, you know, or, you know, from having our third child. And then I realized he didn't get the joke, that it was not a joke at all. He was actually very concerned of why I had gained so much weight in this political campaign. And so I told him, I said, "Well, you know, I would hope I'm much thinner there. I'm actually, 3 weeks from my due date with my third child." And he didn't respond. He looked at my stomach and said, "Oh, well, congratulations." And I just thought, wow, you know, if the only thing you're concerned about, or the only question you have for me, is why I am not as thin as my walk card, then I don't know that I want your vote.
I was not pregnant, kudos, but I would be like out sweating because it's hot and I'm out walking around knocking on doors. And I had a couple guys being like, "Well, you don't look as cute on your card as you do right now." And I'm like, "Right, because it's 90 degrees out here and I'm walking around knocking on doors." And like, I got by the end, like, I was not doing the, "I'm going to smile and make you feel comfortable with your," I would just look at them and be like, "Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you sit with your misogynistic, ridiculous comments. We're just all going to sit in silence and let it hang there, jerks."
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of hugs? Did you get a lot of hugging?
Not yet. Not yet.
I got hugs. I got a lot of side hugs and there was lots of hugging. The mayor and I always talk about that. We get lots of, you'll get it more, I bet, like, as it goes on, especially like if you're elected. People like to hug female elected officials. This is my working theory. And so they feel like it's awkward to shake hands, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why a hug is not more awkward, but.
maybe it's just not as uncomfortable for me because that's my love language too, right? As a teacher, I'm giving hugs and high fives.
But kids are one thing, like old dudes are another.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, well, I know that it's well-intentioned, you know, some of the language that they use from a certain, age group of, you know, darling and sugar and honey. Oh, come on inside. And, you know, I mean, I know it's well-intentioned, or at least I'm optimistic enough to hope that it's well-intentioned, but, you know, it really is uncomfortable and awkward. You know, to be totally honest, I mean, I'm not darling, I'm not sugar. You don't know me. Please don't use that word to describe me yet. You know, we're not friends and it's not a term of endearment. So, you know, Mrs. Hicks works just fine.
Yeah.
What has been easier for you in this process than you thought it might be? Because I think so many women are overwhelmed by the prospect of running for some of the reasons that we were just talking about, right? Is there any aspect of it that you were really worried about that you have found to be natural or fun or surprising in a positive way?
I don't want to harp on this too long, but, you know, it really is the door knocking aspect, because I think that's the most daunting to most people. How do you knock on somebody's door when you don't know them and just strike up a conversation that's meaningful? Thankfully, it feels very much like parent conferences, and you know, to me, it's just an opportunity to listen and learn. And so as they, you know, open up, and you'd be surprised about what people want to talk about, I just let it happen, so that then I can figure out what truly motivates them as a voter. What's important, what's your concern, and how can I best address that? Or maybe I'm not the one to best address that. And so I mean, it has been very natural. I'm also a sorority girl, So I've been telling all my girls that I've been volunteering with Alpha Phi sorority for the last 8 years. And I've told them all that recruitment is very much like running a campaign. You have
I
to
don't
have,
know how many times in my life where like the what's it called where you match the what they want, like dual, there's a word for it, where you're matching the preferences, mm-hmm. the dual yeah. matching preferences. How many times in my like real life that system has come up where you're like, oh, I get it. Like sorority. Okay. Like where there's like some sort of dual ranking and you're trying to make everybody work together. Yeah. And you're like, oh, yeah, no, I get it. You mean rush. Okay, cool. I understand what we're talking about.
It's like that mutual selection, right? Where.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You know, like people. That's what I would always tell my girls. So we're going to find somebody in the room that is like you for you to talk to, because that just makes you feel more comfortable and more confident in your conversation. And so then when you are rating those conversations, that's exactly what campaigning is like. I mean, I'm rating like one, yes, they are all in, they want a yard sign, they are voting for Hicks. Two, they like me, but they're not ready to vote for me yet. Three, they have no idea who they're voting for. Four, probably not their gal. Five, nope. No way impossible. Like they are not voting for me 100%. And, you know, I guess that would be hard for people to take too, of just not being liked. But, you know, the reality is about 50% of the population, they're not going to like me. So then I have to be able to persuade that middle group, what we're now looking at for the general election, that persuadable vote. So,
well, here's what I tell people too. You're just also in the sunshine walking around, which are just two natural mood boosters. Like, you know, when you're spending like a substantial part of your day walking outside, it's kind of hard to be in a bad mood. Like it just,
yeah.
I think just psychologically, evolutionarily, physiology, like it's just the sun and the movement makes you feel good as long as you're staying hydrated. And it's so funny. It's exactly what you said. Like people, I had like two people, I'm probably five out of 5,000 be rude to me, just ugly, unnecessarily ugly. But so many people were kind, and there were so many people, you're right, where they're like, oh, you have to talk politics with me. Sweet. Because people feel like they can't talk politics, I think, a lot of times, that they think it's rude or whatever. And so when somebody knocks on their door, it's like a totally different ballgame. Also, for women candidates, it's important to know that there's just like a lot of stuff. This is the upside of being a female candidate, of knocking on doors. Like, I think it is easier for women to knock on doors than men. Like, because men... A man knocking on your door is going to set off all sorts of security red flags for people. Whereas like me and my little hat, or if I'm pushing my baby, people are like, yeah, what's up? You know, like there's just like a whole threshold if you're a female knocking on door that you don't deal with. Now you have to deal with your safety walking around in a way that a male candidate might not. But I think there is a yeah. upside.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, my team would, you know, like be looking through the data and go, man, your knock rate is insane. People just open their doors for you. I'm like, that's good. I mean, I'm just out here like, hi, I'm a mom. I'm a teacher. For office. You have a minute. Can we talk? You know, and I mean, hopefully that's not, I think that's as less threatening as you can be. But you know, there have been a couple that were just really disappointed or disheartened, I guess, with the political process. I mean, right near the end, gearing up for the primary, I mean, these folks that had their doors knocked so many times, not from just me, but from my primary opponent, who was also, she was formidable. She had a great team. They were out, you know, canvassing as well. And so people were just like cranky about it, right? Like quit knocking on my door, go away. And one lady, she wouldn't open her door, but she opened her window. And she yelled through the screen window about how she was disappointed in all politicians and she would never vote again, and slammed the window. And I thought, if anything, that is more reason to be voting. Yeah. But I'm sorry that we can't have that conversation because you just don't even want to meet me.
I had a guy tell me, I don't vote in local elections. And I said, so you go and only fill out part of the ballot? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, I am so confused by that approach, that you would literally drag your booty all the way there and not fill out the stuff that arguably affects you more. All right, cool. You do you, friend. What the heck?
And, you know, we had some data that kind of indicated teachers in Oklahoma are not great voters. And, you know, I mean, I can list off a lot of logistical reasons why I think that is. But I mean, here's the thing. If we are not casting our ballots, then we should not be surprised that people who are currently elected don't represent our voices if we're not going to take time to vote. So I challenged all of my colleagues. Our data had said 1 in 5 teachers voted in the last presidential election. And so my approach to that was, let's make it 5 in 5 this time.
Yeah.
Let's not, you know, let this hang over our heads and be shamed about it. Let's just fix it. Let's be pragmatic and progressive, and let's just take care of business and get your booty to the polls.
Amen.
Well, I think as someone who has not knocked on doors and does not intend to at any point, I really appreciate what you're doing, because that just running is an act of public service, right? And you're working very, very hard to be a voice for people who have not had enough of a voice in your state's government. I love the idea of adding another breastfeeding representative to Sarah's Pinterest board of women in office.
Are there any good pics out of there of you already like knocking with that baby or something? Because I want to put them on my Pinterest board if there are.
Yes, there are. I'll have to send you some.
Yeah, you have That'd to send perfect. Me some, because I have all that one Italian legislator who's been bringing her kids since it was like a newborn. It's still going to the legislature. I love her. I got lots of her, lots of Emmy, or Senator Duckworth. We got all kinds of stuff. I love it.
Love Senator Duckworth. Actually, when I filed for office, I was wearing Camilla because she was only 8 weeks old. And it was really interesting because the candidate filing process was just totally upended because it was during the teacher walkout. So they had to, you know, make alternative paths, and there was all kind of security that wouldn't normally be on Capitol grounds. And so my team had gotten there early, and they were like, okay, it's great. You can bring your family through this entrance. You know, we know you'll be coming with the kids. Like, we want to make this as easy as possible. I said, sure, absolutely. And then when we got there, we waited in line for over an hour, which I have a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and she's approaching, well, she's 5 months old today, 8 weeks at the time. And so I'm like, this is like, we're done. We're done with being nice. Like, my kids.
I always say they're turning on me. We got to wrap it up.
We got to do this. And so as we got close to the door, they actually said families were no longer permitted through that entrance, that it was only for candidates, and that they could find an alternative route into the building. And trying not to, get my kids all wound up, you know, by my response, I was trying to control it. And I'm like, okay. So I'm looking at my husband, who now has, you know, the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old, and he's going to have to figure this out on his own. And my mother, who was there helping us take care of some things, and she's not in, great health. She's obviously still doing the thing, but she's got asthma. And so I was really concerned, how are they going to get around the building through this alternative entrance, you know? And so I was wearing the baby for logistical reasons, not to make any kind of political statement, but it has become that, you know, they're like, yes, good for you wearing your baby to file for office. And I thought, well, we have 3 kids.
And there's only have 2 hands and 3 kids. Do the math.
You know, let's be honest, this was not some big statement. And so as they're saying, you know, candidates can only enter through this doorway, I'm like looking around, like, are they going to make me take the baby off? Because I was like, I'm going to smuggle this one through. That is just the way this is. And I just walked through that metal detector like I knew what I was doing. They didn't say a word to me, and away we went.
Good for you. I think that says a lot about how you would be as a state senator in really positive ways. So all the best. Please keep us posted on your campaign. We are so grateful that you spent some time with us this morning.
Thank you. I love you guys. Take care.
We hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Carrie Hicks. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us and for being one of many women out there just doing the work to try to serve our country and to do better than we're doing today. Mm-hmm. We have quite a few more interviews with women running for office coming up. We're really excited about them. If you are involved in a campaign, a candidate yourself, or know someone who would be a good guest on Pantsuit Politics, let us know. We want to give a forum to all of the women who are out there working hard.
So Beth is heading to the beach next week. So you're going to be getting a lot of Sarah from the Left. I have some very exciting guest hosts coming your way, sharing some interviews. We'll be speaking with Allie Worthington on the Nuance Life. I'm really excited about that, sharing that interview. And we just wish Beth a happy and safe vacation, Beth.
Thank you so much. And to you the same, because we're going to be kind of high-fiving in the distance and trading places.
So we will be, well, I will be back with you next week. And until then, keep it nuanced, y'all. Fancy Politics is produced by Dylan Garvin. Elise Knapp is our production assistant. Dante Lima is the composer and performer of our theme music.
Our show is listener-supported. Special thanks to our executive producers, Tracy Putoff, George Niedermeyer, James Randall, Cherry Haas, Nicholas Holland, and Chad Silvers.
To support Pantsuit Politics and receive lots of bonus features, visit patreon.com/pantsuitpolitics.
You can connect with us on our website, www.pantsuitpoliticsshow.com. Sign up for our weekly emails and follow us on Instagram.